the Home Shop project is an example of these kinds of things at work. Okay, I mean, it's, you know, your home that you live in is formally a shop. Most people run workshops. You run a home shop. You know, just even on a just very simple semiotic level, you're playing on a whole bunch of different little ideas. But then, you know, it gets obviously much more sophisticated than that, where we open the doors and we turn the public space, the private space, into public space. And we take public space and we bring it into the private. And then you've got, you know, a personal historic level where you talk about, you know, the sutras from the Buddhist temples being brought here to dry, and that sort of inversion of public and private. So that, you know, there are many layers there, and I think you're intuiting some of these ways to question moving between structures that are hierarchical in nature and very fixed and rigid, and the smooth spaces or the networks or meshworks that exist within or that can connect to.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that provides a bit of a language for you to then come back to your aesthetic practice and say, okay, yeah, I've thrown the doors open. Now fucking what? You know? Not to trivialize this step, because I think it's a very important step. But by the time home shop number one is done, you'll have done it. So what does it mean? Where do we go from here? How do we, you know, in the Pierre Huy sense, topologically transform home shop number one into home shop number two? And I think that would require probably some critical investigation on your part to determine that. Because, you know, it's like you talked about the surveillance cam project.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, fucking Jenny Cam, you know, went online in like 1997 or something. So right. Fucking what?
Yes.
Exactly. All right? You know, she ran around in her underwear all the time. We saw this 10 years ago. So what makes it different? What adds nuance to the question of public and private space? And more importantly, how do we even define those things anymore? You know, I think, you know, if we're to problematize home shop, it's that from the very get-go we took public and private spaces as givens.
Right.
And we said, this is a private space, but you never really told me why it was. You have people here over all the time. You know, through your internet connection, you know, you bring people into your home, you bring clients into your home. You certainly repair people or utilities people might come by here, or whatever. I mean, the neighbors have been over and in this space and invited or transgressing it in some way. Why have we taken this as a given, as a private space from the get-go?
Mm-hmm.
And why have we taken this as a public space? You know, particularly when we know that there are ladies wearing red armbands, you know, every 100 feet on the street. You know, when that power generator is owned by some company and not by the people in the neighborhood. So I think if we're going to, you know, where we sit right now at this sort of threshold between public and private, or at least how we've defined it so far, we failed to ask why this is public and this is private.
Right.
Because that certainly would challenge the idea of the membrane.
Very much. Very much so. Well, I think, I mean, one of the initial impetuses of me doing that and doing this project is intuiting the the ambiguities of those things. So to question it at all is that question, actually. I mean, what it, that's the tricky part, is that there isn't a particular thing that I'm trying to place it as. By juxtaposing public and private space, and that's also, again, a question that's been asked, you know, for ages already as well. But to do it in this context, I suppose, would hopefully beg that question.
Let me rephrase it just for 1 second. And, you know, the way I've understood you describing it, and certainly the way I've described it to others,
mm-hmm.
is this idea of blurring the boundaries.
Yes.
You know, the you know, this idea of blurring the boundaries between public and private.
Right.
And I guess what I was just trying to say a second ago is, wait a second, aren't those boundaries always already blurred?
Mm-hmm.
And so, not that I don't think you are blurring boundaries here,
mm-hmm.
but weren't the boundaries already blurred before we even started?
Yes, yes, very much so.
And so then what does this secondary or layered blurring change?
That's a good question. I think that, I mean, in this, I would probably have to say was the first criticism that I heard or that I received about this project was this question, well, what are you trying to say with this? On one hand, we already know that public and private are very blurred, especially in this context. And for me to even use those words, it's because it's an easy way to label it and to describe what's going on, right? You have to know what the ends of the spectrum are in order to even find the in-between, to find markers, I suppose, right? If I'm trying to change something, if I have a point in what I'm doing and what I'm trying to say, I don't know, because I don't think I wouldn't by any means say that what I'm doing is revolutionary, and I wouldn't say that I'm trying to revolutionize. That's the thing. Minor practices, questioning the medium in the first place, is about negotiating between those ends of the spectrum. And by noting those blurry points, the blurriness of the boundary, I would hope that you are able, as an artist or as a writer, as a thinker, whatever, to share with others maybe some grace that they hadn't thought before, that they hadn't questioned, you know? Because I think it's so very common and easy for us to resort to a black or a white or a calling of a very strict public space, a very strict private space. I mean, what is a home, you know? Is that private? You're right, it's not necessarily.
See, but I think you've sold yourself a little short here. I think maybe our problem might be the binary,
mm-hmm.
in the sense of, okay, we're looking for public or we're looking for private, or we're saying, okay, there's a blurring between the two. Well, if we grant that there was blurring already before mm-hmm. we even begun,
mm-hmm.
then what did you accomplish? And I don't think you can say that you didn't accomplish anything, because I don't think that's right. I think this, you know, almost fractalization might be a cliche word, but there was more to it than that.
Mm-hmm.
And I almost want to conceive of it as like a third space was created where they were both at the same time. The people here, and let me rewind a bit, because something that stuck with you, and it stuck with me a little bit, but it's really stuck with you, is the fact that people came inside to watch. That's been a big deal for you.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something important there. And I don't necessarily know what it is.
Mm-hmm.
But there's something important there. But let's say, for instance, that the home is private.
Mm-hmm.
But it's polluted a bit by the public.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And the street is public. But it's certainly polluted a bit by the private.
Right.
So we've got two different spaces. Not quite ideal types.
Right.
But close. With this event, though, you united those spaces. It wasn't, to me, it wasn't blurring boundaries, because the boundaries were already blurred.
Right.
You united those spaces into a third space, to me, where the people out here were simultaneously in the street and in your apartment.
Mm-hmm.
They were watching TV with you.
Mm-hmm.
With each other.
Mm-hmm.
They were a device that was literally physically in your private space afforded them a public opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Simultaneously with people who were consuming the same thing, mirror image,
right,
token, in the private space. So I don't think you can say their space was different from their space. It was the same space.
Mm-hmm.
It was a third space, simultaneously public and private. Now, I guess what's interesting is within that third space,
what are we united by the spectacle?
We're united by the spectacle. we were united by the permeable membrane, right?
Yeah.
And I guess then what becomes interesting is that within that third space, there was still room for a click to form.
Mm-hmm. But that's the thing. And then I mentioned that really briefly in that post, was that click existed beforehand. The type of people that were inside the space versus those outside were very different.
Mm-hmm.
So how much they were mixing is a bit negligible. And it was the pre-formation of the clique, the social networks that were involved, and the friends that decided, oh, I'm going to go to the inside space. That was already existing. So it wasn't a mixing. I mean, that would be a question. Is a third space a mix of the two? Would that have been ideal? You know, if everybody was like, you know, chatting and getting along with everyone else? Or is it enough to say that, hey, we've got this spectacle and we all saw the same thing, you know?
Okay, so I'm going to throw myself as interloper into this mix. So I've got my own clique, me and the tree. Okay, so I'm off over here. Why wasn't I inside? Wouldn't I have shared more in common with the people inside than I did with the local people outside?
Not necessarily. I mean, you didn't fit into either.
Well, that's just it. So why? Why did I pick one over the other?
You didn't necessarily if you were sticking by the tree. I mean, in the end, you weren't, but
I wasn't sticking by the tree out of a non-willingness to engage. Because mm-hmm. The tree was sort of my leaning post. Seriously. I was out and back.
Yeah.
And out and back and over and back.
Yeah.
And around and back.
Yeah.
And that isn't really that different from me at home.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I could be at a bar with, you know, in my undergrad where I knew 90% of the people at the bar, mm-hmm. and I would do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have my little, you know,
mm-hmm.
place to post up, and I would out and back, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's not that unusual for me. Number two, I did feel the interloper status mm-hmm. to a degree where I'm like, Elaine created this for these people,
mm-hmm.
you know? She didn't create it for me, she created it for them, you know? And so when we put it on, it's for them. I want them to have the good time. I don't want to be the focus of attention.
Right.
you know, or I don't want meeting the Laowai to be the point of all this, because this wasn't the point of all this.
Right.
So there was that aspect to it as well. It was like, I was just happy to sit there and watch everybody's happy faces, you know, because we'd done this thing all day, so there would be happy faces. And so it was like a reward for your effort, just watching their happy faces.
Mm-hmm.
So there was that aspect too. It was like, oh, it's for them, and you know, they're having a good time, so I'm cool with that.
Yet,
despite all that, I ended up engaging with that crowd more than that crowd, where in terms of probably age, intellectual interests, you know, discussions about the world, probably, maybe language, I probably would have more common with the people inside here than I did with the people outside there.
Right.
And so I'm very curious, you know, to extrapolate to this idea of third space. Why did I choose to hang out in one neighborhood of it and not in the other? Because I think what you're getting at, or I think a question you're getting at is, if we blur these boundaries, if we create these third spaces, if we, however you want to label it, is change possible?
Mm-hmm.
Did anything actually change? You know? And if the cool kids went and sat inside and the locals stayed outside and there was no mingling, was there really any, did really anything revolutionary happen here? And small r revolutionary.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm getting a sense that that's an important question to you. And in that sense, probably no. You know, it just became two awkward groups at a party. One sits against one wall, and you know,
yeah.
The teenage boys sit against here, and the teenage girls sit against here, and nobody dances in the middle. Which would all be fine and dandy until you throw the Canadian interloper into the mix, and you say, okay, well, yeah, revolutionary change was possible, because I felt it. Now, but only if you consider it a small, small, minor practice.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned something that night, whether any of them learned something from me is debatable. Questionable, who knows, but I learned something from them, and I learned something being here.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, change is possible. No, I mean, I could have gone anywhere else in the city and watched this event.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I talked to people the next day, what'd you do for the opening ceremonies? Oh, I went here, we had some beers and went to one of the public spaces.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I watched on TV, blah blah blah. I'm like, oh well, I did this. You know?